talk is cheap. You ever heard those words before? Ever spoken those words before? We hear or we say them on the other side of having heard a statement of intentions, maybe even a commitment, maybe even a promise. And we say it because in our experience, promises aren't always kept, intentions aren't always honored, commitments, even covenants, broken. Things change. Circumstances change. And what seemed like a good idea at the time, not so much. We rationalize, we equivocate, we look for the loophole, we read the fine print. Talk is cheap. Sometimes things work out better than we'd expected, and we don't need the person on the other side of that commitment. Other times they work out worse than we'd expected, and we lose trust. We feel betrayed by the other, even if that other is God. Talk is cheap. Joshua calls together, near the end of his life, all of Israel, because he wants to be sure that their talk is not cheap. He wants to be sure that their covenant with God on their side is upheld. And Joshua has very little time left in his life to get a reality check, a gut check, among the people whom he's led for quite a while. So the way he does that is to first reflect back on what God has done within covenant. That's why I asked you to place mark page 237 in the Old Testament section. Because on Wednesday, when we were teaching our confirmation students in here, we had them do this exercise. And in the first 13 verses of the passage that I just read, there are all kinds of I statements made by God, describing what God has done within covenant to protect and preserve and lead his people. So we're going to do that too. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just those phrases where God is describing what he did. And I want you just to be able to see how abundant these are. So it starts really in verse 3. And I'm just going to read quickly through some of these snippets. And he begins, before Abraham even knows God, and certainly before Abraham worships God. Then I took your father Abraham. I led him. I made his offspring many. I gave him Isaac. To Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. More I gave. I sent. I plagued. I brought. There are a lot of I broughts. I did. I brought again. I handed them over to you. I destroyed them. I rescued you. I sent the hornet ahead of you. I gave you, and this is really the summary of all of it in verse 13, I gave you a land on which you had not labored, towns that you had not built. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive yards that you did not plant. Joshua then says, given all what God has done for you, choose this day whom you'll serve. Whether you choose to serve the Lord, the one who did all these things for you, or the gods of your ancestors, maybe in Egypt, maybe in the land where Abraham was long, long ago. But choose today. Choose today who it's going to be. And, by the way, when you choose, commit to serving in sincerity and faithfulness. That's his hedge against cheap talk. Let your actions align with your statements, with your intentions. Serve the Lord in sincerity and faithfulness. And then Joshua historically has led his people boldly. He's led them from a position of trust in God. He doesn't wait to hear what they have to say. He says, while y'all are thinking about it, it's for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He leads by example. He leads by going first. And the people, having heard all this, they say, oh yeah, we want that. We'll serve the Lord. And Moses, I knew I was going to do that. Joshua says, no, you can't. You can't. You don't even know what you're saying. Talk is cheap. Now, he's coming from a base of history. I mean, he's not just projecting. Their track record of being faithful to God hasn't been great. He says, no, you can't do it. God's holy. He's so other than you. God's jealous. He doesn't really leave room for others. Nah, you can't do it. I say, oh, yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. Do you ever do that with your kids? Say, I'll bet you can't eat all those vegetables in 10 seconds. Oh, yes, I can. They only fall for that like once. They said, no, we really want this. And Joshua says, well, your witnesses against yourselves. Yeah, but before there were recording devices and cameras and all that, it was all verbal. You had to have two or three witnesses to confirm the truthfulness of something. There's more than two or three of them there. He said, look, you're your own witnesses. I said, oh, we really want this. Joshua says, good. All right, then. Just so you know, that means that you put away all the foreign gods. Put away all the foreign gods. Now, foreign gods were objects. And, you know, they were physical. And they were thought to have divine power, or at least to evoke the one who did have divine power. And they had gods for everything. And we might think of it as like superstitions. You know, do you have superstitions? Little things that bring you luck. And Joshua's saying, you can't have that. You can't really hedge your bets and be fully sold out to God. So it's one or the other. You've got to put away your household gods. You've got to put away all the foreign gods. I say, no, we'll do it. So as I said, Joshua's nearing the end of his life. I mean, this is his here I stand before the people of God. This is his I have a dream. His dream is that God's people are actually faithful, the one he's led. And they're his legacy. They're his legacy. It matters. Joshua's name is itself a sign and an accomplishment, a fulfillment of God's covenant. Joshua's name means God saves. And he had described all the ways that God had saved, many of which included under his leadership. Joshua got one thing wrong in all that lengthy discourse. Maybe you picked up on it. Anybody catch it? Got one thing wrong. He said, God does not forgive. Did you hear that? I hope that jarred you. Because that had been his experience of God. We have a more extensive experience of God in which forgiveness is abundant. So in Joshua's time, the people of God were defined by bloodline. Were they within the line that traced back to Abraham? And specifically through Jacob. In the New Testament, people of God are also defined by bloodline, but in a different way. They're defined by the blood of Jesus. His life, his death, his resurrection, all of which extended God's presence and forgiveness into a world that had made its talk cheap over and over and over again. And Jesus, in his ministry, doesn't detail the whole sweep of God's saving actions. He simply says when he sees people, follow me. Follow me. And implied in that is the question, choose today. Follow or not? Yes or no? What's it going to be? So here we are now as people of God who are forgiven, but who get the same question. We have the same question before us every day. Choose today who you will serve, whether the Lord your God or something else. But choose. And to help in that, I thought it might be worth looking back at some of the I statements God might make in looking at the history of atonement, this church. So, this isn't complete, but it's representative. In 1961, I moved a body of Lutherans that no longer exists in that form, the American Lutheran Church, to begin a church from nothing in Barrington, Illinois. In 1961, I sent a pastor knocking door to door to try and generate interest. People still answered their doors back then. And in 1961, the product of that door knocking brought five families. Five families, which were considered sufficient to start Lutheran Church of the Atonement. Shortly thereafter, I built for you a very funny-looking building that blended the history of our ancestors with a very forward look into the future. Within a few short years, because I brought growth to you, I built again. And really throughout your history, I planted within you a heart for people, a love for people, and in particular, a love for people who were not doing so well in the world. On the other side of the Vietnam War, I moved you to be involved in resettling refugees who came from Laos, of all places. I moved you in the early days to partner with a church on the west side of Chicago that had a dream of bringing quality education to students who were living under harsh circumstances. I moved you in Barrington to open your doors to the homeless. You were the first church in Barrington to serve as a site for PADS. During a recession, I moved you again when your own people were struggling with work to start a ministry first known as the Career Center and now known as Career Place. I saw the need to merge academic education and spiritual formation in the lives of young people, and I started among you Atonement Christian Day School. I saw the need to not only feed hungry people with food, but with community, and I began here the community meal. You've had, through my prompting, a response to disasters and hunger around the world, which seem to be coming with ever-increasing frequency. I held you together during contentious times that could have destroyed other churches. To this day, I have among you the people of God across the whole sweep of generations, from newly born to the 90s and occasionally into the hundreds. And I have things in mind for you that I have not yet even revealed to you. It's what God has done, some of what God has done in and through atonement. What about your personal story? What would God's I statements be in your personal story? We've got a lot of people in the room, a lot of stories. I can't begin to imagine what yours are, so I'll share some of mine. I knew you before you were born. I brought you into a family that loved imperfectly, but love nevertheless. I brought you into a family that made sure that you knew who I was from a very early age. I gave you gifts abilities, interests. But even more than that, it gave to you a love for people. I was the constant in all the change across your life. I delivered you from problems of others' making, and especially I delivered you from many problems of your own making. I took your love for people, and just when you thought you had your life all figured out, I knocked you off balance and set you instead to communicate my love for people. I gave you a wife. I gave you 3 children with all the delight and all the struggle that come with that. I gave you a people to lead who are both gifted and passionate and sometimes detached and obstinate. And I have for you all the days of your life, from before you were born and on into eternity. You have a story like that. You have a story like that. And your story like that one, and our story as church, they come together when we come here and say, this is my church. I'm going to serve out my covenant in baptism in this place. What does it mean to serve God in this place in sincerity and faithfulness? What does it mean for our talk to not be cheap? On the way in, I hope you received a copy of the Atonement Membership Covenant. If not, I hope you can see it. It's nearby. And so we've been using this for about the last 12 years, give or take, of our new membership. And so if you've been here longer than 12 years, you say, "Ah, oh, Pastor, I didn't sign that. I'm grandparented, and those words don't apply to me." Right? But I think that even if you didn't sign it, you're going to find these words to be representative of what it means to serve God in sincerity and faithfulness in this place. So I'm only going to hit the 4 kind of super categories and then drill down on a couple. I will protect the unity of my church. I will share the responsibility of my church. I will serve the ministry of my church, and I will support the vitality of my church. And specifically, I'm going to drill down on 2 because we're at the time of year where we historically invite all of us to reflect on what our serving will be through both time and money in the coming calendar year. So we're drawing to the end of 2018. We look into 2019. And so those 2 statements, specifically in the 3rd group, I will serve the ministry of my church by discovering and using my spiritual gifts. I'll serve as God has given me the capacity to serve. And I will support the vitality of my church by giving regularly. It's not mine. It's God's. And I will participate in serving through financial generosity. Well, what do time and money have in common? Any ideas? So I'll ask it as a question. How many of you have all the time in the world, and how many of you have all the money in the world? We all wish we had more of both. They're in some kind of at least perceived scarcity in our lives where we have to make choices. Can't do everything that we want. Time and money. So we're doing a new thing this year. When we communicate commitments for 2019, we're also including a serving of time. So when you get a commitment card, either in the pews or mailed to your home, there's going to be something on there that invites you to communicate serving in time. And then the serving of money. What does it mean to give to God in a way that honors God. So here's the thing. We have a wide range of folks when it comes to financial generosity. We have folks who are extraordinarily generous. We have folks who are somewhat generous. And we have folks who are totally on the sidelines. And so I want to look at those who are extraordinarily generous and tell you how they got there. There's two routes. The most generous people in this congregation are that way because God told them to. If you ask them, why do you give so much? God told me to. And it's not like, you know, I went without food for 30 days and in this hallucinatory state, you know, I got a direct message. No, God told them to in the Bible consistently and repeatedly. Generosity is to be upfront, proportionate, sacrificial. So for our most generous folks, it's just a math problem. What does that look like for me now? But the thing that's moved more of our people to get in the game as far as generosity, at least in the time that I've been here, was some years ago when we said, this is what we spend on ministry here, at this place and beyond. And here's where that works out per family. Interestingly, also a math problem. So wherever you are in that, the ask is that in 2019, that your serving be greater than in 2018 in terms of both serving time and in financial generosity. So we'll have more to say about that over the next few weeks. Not too soon to begin reflecting and praying. God's talk is never cheap. Not ever. And when we serve God in sincerity and faithfulness with time and money, neither is ours. Amen.